Chapter 13. You Poor Bastards. Being asked to come to Cullidge's office was not one of Yosef's favorite experiences. This day was no exception.
Yosef, while you were looking at the house site, I received confirmation an all-clan conclave is called for 2-6 days from today in Oro City. All the clans coming to aid Moreland voted for the conclave call, as did enough other clans to require mandatory attendance by all headmen. This conclave is crucial for what we do next against the Narthani. Every headman will bring his main advisors. Naturally, Vordic Lewis and Petter Kenrick will come with me. I also want you there for advice, and Dennis Vega, because he has been at the front of fights against the Narthani. In addition, Dennis has adopted suggestions from you, perhaps faster than others might have. Yosef wanted to object that he was in the middle of the move to Kernford and needed to get back to Abbotsford, but he felt stuck. Whether or not he knew what he was doing, or had any business giving military or political advice, Cullidge, Mera, and the others expected it of him. He stood looking at his father-in-law for several moments, silent while he considered and discarded arguments against going as immaterial or fruitless. His most cogent reservations related to who he really was and where he came from, neither of which he could voice. Do I have any business giving advice? No, but so what? I've done it before at St. Sidran's in Moreland City. And it worked out, which I strongly believe was due to luck. On the other hand, might I actually have useful things to contribute? What if even with my abysmal lack of qualifications, I'm still the best the Cadelli have? Through his mind flashed an old movie, a bad one he'd seen on TV. Richard Burton played the jaded owner of a small hotel in Haiti. When the people are terrorized by Papa Doc Duvalier's secret police, the Tonton Macoute. Alec Guinness played a British Army ex-major in Haiti on business. Both characters fall afoul of the secret police, with Guinness being killed and Burton taking refuge with a small band of freedom fighters who mistake him for the major. The movie ends with Burton standing in front of 8 bedraggled French-speaking Haitian men who expect expert military advice from a British officer. In English, Burton starts his first address to his troops with, "You poor bastards." That was what Yosef felt tempted to say. Oh, these people are poor bastards. If defeating the Narthani depends on me. They were by no means a stupid people. Well, not all of them anyway. The Moreland and Iwell headmen surely would have fallen into that category. Certainly not Cullidge, Mera, Dennis, Cadwulf, and many others. And they didn't lack for bravery. Even the stupid Morelanders showed that by their willingness to charge the Narthani, an incredibly dumb tactic. Cullidge waited patiently for Yosef's response. The headman had learned from Mera and his own observations that rushing Yosef while he remained in deep thought was futile. A part of Cullidge's mind wondered whether the rumors were true. Did God whisper in the man's ear? And in case God did, why interrupt? "Sorry, Cullidge, could you give me a moment?" Yosef didn't wait for an answer. He turned his back on the headman and walked to a garden window. Cullidge sat and waited. As always seemed to be the case on Cadellium, flowers bloomed outside the window. Yosef noticed the coral and vine blossoms just opening. In another 6 days, their aroma would reach for hundreds of yards. Below the vines in partial shade, Yosef saw what looked like pansies with black faces against yellow, blue, and maroon petals. He experienced a brief memory of Earth, until a flock of small green and purple mervers landed on and around a birdbath, The distraction gone, his mind came back to the moment. The conclave. I have to go. And who's to say what I should or shouldn't say to the clans? Despite myself, I have to be there to argue against ill-advised actions that even I can see. I have to do it for myself and Mera and all the others. Those I know and all the other Cadelli.
Yosef turned back to Kalich.
Of course, Hetman. I'll come and offer whatever I can.
Bring what you wrote about what you remember of military operations, said Kalich.
Oh shit, I haven't finished it,
Yosef moaned to himself.
When the Hetman had pressed him to recognize and accept his responsibility to give advice, if he had it, Yosef had said he would write up sayings of famous theorists of military campaigns.
In fact, on Earth, he had read only the single most well-known writings of Jomini, Clausewitz, and Sun Tzu. He hadn't studied any of them as well as he did texts for his classes, but only perused them more casually, so he could pretend to be knowledgeable with other video gamesters. As a consequence of his less intense study, his enhanced memory could dredge up only fragments, instead of whole pages and chapters, the way he could with chemistry and other science texts. Of the three writers' works, he liked Clausewitz's the most, though Jomini's offered more practical, detailed advice. Sun Tzu's was duplicative, as might be expected, because common principles would naturally occur to different writers, even if they lived millennia and thousands of miles apart. However, Sun Tzu's work required the most summarizing, because Yosef thought the Chinese writer sounded too much like Yoda, the Jedi Master. Although Yosef couldn't remember whole pages from the three writers, he could recall versions of bullet points, pithy summaries of major principles. If nothing else, this might help the Cadelli leaders avoid the most egregious errors and get them to think instead of emotionally reacting. After witnessing the Moreland and Iwell behavior at Moreland City, Yosef feared that too many of the clan leaders didn't appreciate that cold logic during battle surpassed emotions or delusions of honor and glory.
Of course you'll go with Father to the All-Clan Conclave,
Mera said to Yosef that evening, when Kulich announced the upcoming trip at the Keelan family evening meal.
Naturally, replied Yosef, when what he wanted to say was, as if I have any choice.
Yosef excused himself as early as he could after the meal and retired to Mera's old quarters, where he had set up a temporary work area comprising a small desk, 2 6-foot bookcases that partly walled off the area from the rest of the sitting room, and lamps and writing materials. As he concentrated, oblivious, Mera's hand on his shoulder startled him, and he jumped.
Sorry, Yosef. I thought you heard me come in.
What are you working on?
The summary of what I remember about tactics and strategy, as I mentioned that your father asked me to write. I've worked on it off and on. But now he's asked me to have something ready when we leave for the conclave in 8 days. I have 40 or 50 pages of notes, but it's all disjointed, so I'm trying to boil it down to major points. I hope I don't mislead anyone who reads it into thinking they know anything about military theory. I'm sure you'll do fine, and it'll be helpful.
Yosef grunted, conveying his lack of conviction and her reassurance.
What I'm trying to do is summarize everything I remember in a list of short statements. I'm afraid it's disorganized, duplicative, and contradictory in places, since I'm pulling pieces from different sources I can remember. I'm not sure if the clan leaders reading this will be helped or confused. However, I'm about finished doing the best I can. Can I read what you have? Asked Mera.
Yosef sighed, sat back in his chair, and handed 3 sheets of paper to Mera. She settled into a cushioned armchair next to a kerosene lamp and turned up the flame. Looking at the title, she asked,
On war, that's the title?
What's this word?
War. Remember the last 6 days when I asked you about Cadelli words for fighting in conflicts? said Yosef.
Yes, and you said there was a word missing from Gedali, although certain words in other languages match the word you were looking for.
That day, Yosef couldn't recall an appropriate word from his knowledge of Gedali. Mara confirmed words that connoted fights, feuds, vendettas, battles, skirmishes, conflict, and more, though none that he believed were appropriate for fighting on a scale that might soon happen on Cadellium. Only when Mara described words from Narthoni, Fuomi, and Landolin that seemed appropriate for war did Yosef realize Cadelli lacked an exact word.
We need a word to describe what the clans face, said Yosef. And I doubt the people here would want to use an Arthani word, or even one from another realm. I've chosen to use the word from my language, English. The word is war. A prolonged military conflict between peoples or realms where the outcome is total victory or defeat.
While Yosef's definition wasn't strictly accurate, he decided the clans needed to come to a frame of mind consistent with the level of threat they faced. He couldn't judge the Narthani depth of commitment toward the subjugation of Cadellium, but the clans needed to prepare for the worst. Mara set down the sheets.
Explain it to me clearly, Yosef. What is war?
I'll define the word with the example of the Narthani against all the peoples of Cadellium. The Narthani intend to turn Cadellium into part of their empire and convert the people into Narthani, whether they want to be or not. Those who resist will be killed or enslaved. Every surviving Cadelli will live and serve at the will of the Narthani. Within a few generations, all memory of the history and language of the island will disappear. If the clans and the people of Cadellium want to prevent this, they must commit themselves to use every possible means and make every conceivable sacrifice to fight the Narthani. The Narthani are waging war on Cadellium, and the clans and people must wage war on the Narthani, at least those here on the island.
Using all means I understand, said Mara. What do you mean by every conceivable sacrifice? What if the only way to stop the Narthani resulted in 1/5 of the island's people dying?
Mara paled and put a hand to her face.
1/5? That would be... Good God, over 100,000 people!
Would the clans be willing to pay that price? Asked Yosef.
Mara shook her head.
I don't know.
I've never considered something that horrific.
Give me a moment.
She sat quietly for several minutes, her arms hugged to her body as she chewed on her lower lip. Then she put her hands on her lap and with a firm jaw looked at Yosef.
If the alternative was for the Narthani to win, then I think we would be willing to make that ultimate sacrifice.
What do you think would be the ultimate sacrifice?
Yosef asked quietly with a sad expression. Mara stared for several seconds, her eyes narrowing as she took in her husband's face.
I see where you're going. You'll keep increasing the sacrifice until you find where I say to stop. The level of sacrifice I don't believe my people are willing to pay.
Yosef only nodded.
Then I think it would depend on the individual, which is the same for any level of sacrifice. There are those who would capitulate to the Narthani under threat to even one member of their family. Others would resist even if everyone were to be killed. But the whole of the Cadelli, Yosef asked. What would most do and what would be the combined will of the people?
I think...
Mara paused.
It would depend on whether there was hope. If we had a chance of victory,
then the whole of the people would fight on. As long as there was hope. Is this what you foresee? That sacrifices beyond what most have imagined might be required? It's possible. I just wonder if the headmen coming to the conclave have any concept of what may come, and if they do, what will their reactions be? Should I say things like I just said to you or not? I'm not wise enough to answer, Yosef. I don't know if anyone is. However, maybe this isn't the time to say these things. The situation isn't dire enough to make such decisions or judgments. For now, I would advise waiting. Maybe the Nathani will leave on their own. Maybe the clans can come up with a plan to drive them off the island. Maybe God will intervene. I don't know. Just wait. That's what I was thinking, said Yosef. I just wanted to hear someone else say it. Remember, Yosef, everything that might go wrong doesn't rest on you. And don't assume some of the headmen don't already foresee what you think only you can foresee. Maybe they don't speak it aloud, but similar thoughts have surely gone through the minds of the better headmen, including my father. Yosef grunted. In other words, quit agonizing and just do what you can. Your words, said Mira with a definite sniff. But good advice. Now let me read again what you've gotten so far for father. Mara picked up the sheets once more, leaned back and toward the lantern to get full light, and began reading. On war. War is the total commitment to defeat an enemy using whatever means and making whatever sacrifices are deemed necessary. War is compelling an enemy to do your will. Blood is the price of victory. Nothing is accomplished without risk. War is a trinity of violence, chance, and reason. War is totality. Anything else is fantasy, if victory is the goal. The ultimate goal must be clearly defined. Once that is done, then the necessary steps can be identified. The three parts of fighting a war are strategy, tactics, and logistics. Strategy. Strategy is defined by the goal and involves planning before battles. Tactics. The actions used to implement a strategy, especially how men are used in battles. Logistics. Providing men with food, ammunition, medical care, transportation, and anything else required to fight battles. Strategy is future-oriented. Tactics deal with the here and now. Strategy is the art of using battles to win a war. Tactics are the art of using men in battle. For example, the defeat of an enemy is a strategy that may take many battles, while the details of using men in battle are tactics. Supplying everything that's needed is logistics. A war may involve many battles, but remember that only the last battle is decisive. Planning. Careful planning of strategy and tactics is essential, but the perfect plan is a fantasy. No plan survives first contact. You must be ready to abandon a plan if necessary, and any plan must take into account the enemy's ability to frustrate it. None of these principles are to be followed without reasoning whether or not they are appropriate for each individual situation. Rigid adherence can be as bad as ignoring a principle. Principles are more what to avoid than what to do. Theory must never be used in place of judgment, but used as an aid. General principles. 1. When absolute superiority is not attainable, you must produce a relative one at individual points by making use of what you have and defeat the enemy in detail.
However, be aware that this weakens other positions and puts the rest of your force at risk. 2. Do not divide your force in the face of an equal or superior enemy. Do not risk defeat in detail. 3. Keep the initiative. It is better to be the ones deciding on battle conditions than to let the enemy do it. 4. In the face of the same information, audacity is better than timidity. 5. Surprise the enemy at every opportunity. The essence of surprise is the security of your position and intentions and the speed at which you act. Security and reconnaissance are opposite sides of the same coin. All warfare is based on deception. 6. The harder the training, the easier the fighting. 7. Do not run out of options. Never place yourself where there is only one course of action. 8. Impede the enemy's lines of communications and supplies without endangering your own. 9. Concentrate at decisive points. 10. Mobility of forces and rapid movement expand options and limit the enemy's. 11. Be first to the battlefield. 12. Always factor in the enemy's strength. 13. Maintaining the discipline to follow the leader's orders is essential. 14. A central authority is critical to carry out both strategy and tactics. 15. It is more important to outthink than to outfight. Faults of a leader. 1. Recklessly committing to fight without weighing balances and consequences. 2. Being afraid for his own safety. 3. Letting emotions make decisions instead of reason. 4. Worrying about honor. There is no honor in war, only victory or defeat. To worry excessively about honor is to foster defeat. 5. Too much solicitude toward his men. Decisions must be made that will lead to men's deaths. Attempting to prevent any deaths will only lead to more. In addition, leaders must be men of ability and not only because of birth or influence. Even a hetman should not lead men into battle if there are other men of more ability. The balance of forces. 1. If you have 10 times the enemy's strength or more, surround them and they will probably surrender. 2. If you have 3 to 5 times the enemy's strength, attack if it will achieve a goal worth any losses. 3. If your strength and your enemy's are equal, engage to hold in place, but not to defeat, unless the enemy makes a mistake. 4. If your strength is less than the enemy's, evade and look for opportunities where the balance is more in your favor. 5. If your strength is much weaker than the enemy's, retreat and live to fight another day. Defense versus offense. 1. You can prevent defeat by defense, but victory usually requires you to attack. 2. Defense is inherently the strongest, but to win, you must force the enemy to attack where you have the advantage. 3. If you entrench behind strong fortifications, you compel the enemy to seek a solution elsewhere. Do not force an enemy into a corner. Leave your enemy a retreat avenue. To get an enemy to do what you want, you must put him in a situation even more unpleasant than what you want him to do. Otherwise, he will wait for things to improve. If you determine to leave no retreat for the enemy, you must have an unassailable position and be willing to take losses inflicted by a desperate opponent. Mera read the pages once again quickly, and then, without looking up, read them the second and third time slowly, the last time making notes in the margins. After the last read, she sighed and looked at Yosef. "Part of me now wishes I hadn't read this." "What do you mean?"
Yosef asked in surprise.
I haven't experienced any of the fighting itself, though God knows I'm aware of the consequences. And I've talked with eyewitnesses and read reports, but what you wrote, somehow it makes it more real. The cold rationality of what you lay out as principles. Although I've no doubt they're all logical and needed, now I envision men doing these exact things. I also imagine you doing them, or worse, having them done to you by the Narthani. Enough of my reaction, though. Father was right. The other Hetman need to read this. And not just Hetman, but any Cadelli in a leadership position. However, therein lies problems. You say that even a Hetman should not lead in battle if there are more skilled men. I don't know how many Hetmen will agree or follow your words. You'll risk some Hetmen ignoring the rest by telling them they shouldn't lead. I worry about the same effect where you warn about leaders who might fear for themselves. To even mention the possibility that a Hetman might be afraid will antagonize some of them. As for honor, I know of a couple of Hetmen for whom honor is like life. Most of the rest of what you wrote either seems logical to me or I can't judge. You might consider removing the most contentious parts. No, said Yosef. If I start taking out parts, there's no stopping it. College wanted what I could remember, and this is it. Plus, those parts are real concerns. The clans will have to learn them as soon as possible, so they might as well start now. We can only hope the parts they ignore will not be too damaging before they learn or accept them.
All right, then. I'll smooth out some of the language for you. Your Cadelli is quite good, but there are a few grammar details I'll correct, and I'll suggest different wording in a few places.
2 days later, Yosef sat with Kulich, Vordig Lewis, Peter Kenrick, and Dennis Vega. The four men had read on war and were full of questions.
Yosef, said Dennis, there seem to be contradictions. You write that planning is essential but should be abandoned without hesitation if necessary. In another place, it says to concentrate your force to have numerical superiority, then warns of the danger of doing so.
And how do you decide what is a decisive point to concentrate your men? Complained Lewis. How can a leader know for certain how strong an enemy is until a battle is joined?
Yosef sighed, fully aware of contradictions. The Hetman asked me to write what I remembered about military theory, and that's what you have. I've always said that I wasn't trained to be a military leader, and I only know what I've read. I'm sure there is more I didn't recall, and these principles are from different writers. It's more important to realize that nothing can substitute for the judgment of the leader who has to make decisions quickly. These are only guides. The good leader has to evaluate each situation individually. Unfortunately, the best teacher is experience in taking actions that involve life and death decisions.
I'm sorry, Hetman, said Lewis, addressing Kulich. But while some of this is only common sense, I don't see how useful other parts are.
Dennis disagreed.
I understand Sir Lewis's questions, and I share some of the concerns. I'll need to study this more and let each part be compared to what I've experienced or situations I've imagined I might find myself in.
I'll agree with Dennis on the point that we need to think more about this, said Kulich.
All three of you give this more thought and share what Yosef has written with a few other men in leadership positions. We'll talk more before the conclave.
How did they receive what you wrote?
Asked Mera, when Yosef returned to their quarters.
No surprises. Some doubts about the usefulness, especially from Lewis.
Dennis wasn't enthused by any of it, although he's taking it seriously. He'll absorb much of it.
As for your father and Kenrick, I don't know. Neither gave much of any opinion, though my sense is they'll consider it. In all, it's about the best I could expect. I just hope it's useful and helps prevent the worst mistakes without causing any.
Well, you did what Father asked, so I assume you'll be off to Abersford.
Yes, said Yosef. I wanted to leave today, but I'm tired.
I've told Carnegie and Balwas we'll leave tomorrow morning after eating. A day to get there, 3 days working with the shops and projects, then back here. I should be back in 5 days, 6 at the most.
I hope it's the last trip to Abersford to complete the move.